Okay, here we go. Stand by. 3, 2, 1, action.
Assume nothing.
Rash, bald-faced blasphemy.
Question everything.
I find it extremely hard to imagine.
Open your eyes.
It is quite all right to be an atheist.
The fastest growing group of people in the country has been measured as being those who have no belief or who are atheists.
You don't have to be apologetic or quiet about it.
Challenge the opposition.
You see religion on 100 fronts losing the argument.
And start thinking. This is The Thinking Atheist Worldwide.
FYI, I'm using Blog Talk Radio switchboard tonight, and that means when I go to the caller side, you're going to hear some glitches. Just roll with it. Not a big deal, okay? But it's not your fault. It's not on your end. It's a challenge we continue to have occasionally with Blog Talk Radio's live switchboard. It is what it is, okay? If you're looking at the broadcast schedule and wondering what's going on, this is just a bonus show. Recording this on a Saturday night. Natalie's out at a thing, somebody's birthday. I had the evening. I'd like to try to talk about something other than what we always talk about, which is religion and the non-belief in religion, if possible. Just something different. You know, whatever is on your mind. It's hard whenever I say that to actually do it, because religion always comes up, or atheism or something along those lines. It's going to come up, and that's fine. But I'm just saying it's okay for us occasionally to talk about something else, okay? The host needs a break. We got some great stuff on the horizon. Tuesday, I'm doing a show called Jesus on a Fish Stick, where we talk about these quote-unquote miracles. The miracles that are supposed to prove that there is a God. We're going to have some fun with that. Coming up in about 10 days, I'm talking to Lucian Greaves of the Satanic Temple about the activism they have. Talking to Dave Fitzgerald about his new book about the non-historical Jesus, or the lack of evidence for a literal man Jesus who walked the earth. We're going to do a show in April on 12-step programs. These often religiously motivated 12-step programs. And if you have an experience with that, an opinion on that, did it work for you? Is it crap? Did it make you better? Did it make you worse? Do you have a better solution? Let us know. Email podcast@thethinkingatheist.com. Okay? And we are going to provide some secular alternatives to some of these faith-based 12-step programs. Lots going on. Lots going on. Tonight, let's talk about something else. I don't care what it is. Let's just talk about something. Let's just hang out together as friends. It's a Saturday night. Natalie wants to get chickens. What has happened to my life? I'm driving around last night, and we're prepping the sale of our home. And if you are a Patreon supporter, you may have heard some of this in the bonus show. Please bear with me, okay? But it's life stuff, and this is what's going on in my world. We finally did decide we're going to move about 10 miles down the road. We just wanted something new and different. We're just ready for a change. You ever come to that point in your life? There's a few things about this, and we've had a great time here, but there's a few things about this place that we would like to make it better. I'd like a better designed kitchen. I need more storage space. I'd like to configure the studio differently to be able to do what I do. Just stuff like that, right? And so we close. We close on Friday. So we're 6 days away. And it's all coming to a head, and all these chess pieces have to move just perfectly in the right direction. Everything has to happen perfectly, and then hopefully we'll be able to sort of start this next chapter in our lives. And the house it's got just a slightly larger backyard, and it's right on the edge of Tulsa County. And yes, I'm staying in Tulsa for a number of reasons. First of all, for what I can buy a house for in Tulsa, I could buy, for the same amount, I could get like a single wide mobile home near the beach. And I would love to live near Anna Maria Island. Trust me, I'd like to be able to go out and live near some of these beautiful places. But it, for me, it came down to, because I work from home and I spend all the time in the house, it came to, you know, where can I get more house for my money? And there's a part of me, I guess, that does enjoy being an atheist in the buckle of the Bible Belt, where it matters. If you're an atheist in a place where nobody cares, it's not quite as urgent. But something about having the thinking atheist sort of originated out of Tulsa, Oklahoma, does give me some joy. And I do love my family and friends who are all here. So we're staying here, okay? So we're 6 days away. The house has a slightly larger backyard. Natalie's like, I think I want chickens. And I just look over at her. What? You know, chickens. We could get eggs and, you know, they're fun to have. And of course, I'm thinking about work and pain and predators and all the stuff that can go horribly wrong. And, you know, what are the city ordinances? And what, I mean, is it even legal to have chickens? Are you kidding? Oh, yeah, we should have chickens. I had a chicken. We had a chicken once when I was growing up. It was great fun. You know what's funny? When I was growing up, we had a chicken. And all I remember is that its butt was always nasty. It was always dirty. All right, so you get eggs and you got to clean the eggs. And then do you keep them in a pen? Do you put them in a, what do you do in the winter? How do you keep, you know, coyotes and owls and stuff from coming? What about Henry and Rat Dog? And you laugh. But when your dog weighs 3.5 pounds, you have to worry about your dog getting pecked to death by a chicken. You know, the chicken's bigger than the dog. The cat already chases Henry all the time. I put him out back and the chicken will just kick his ass. What happened to Henry? He was killed. He was killed by a chicken. Chicken named Mary Poopins. No, I can't tell people that. I will go to the store. I'm buying the dozen eggs. We're not getting chickens. We're not doing it. Honestly, someone sent me an article about, you know, the cost of doing this. Even if you did it just for the hell of it, many of them die and the processes involved in getting the chickens to you. I'm out. Two dogs and a cat. I'm good. I don't need chickens. She's been on a roll anyway. You know, I mean, obviously, we've both been totally, you know, head down trying to get this home stuff taken care of. And I'm appreciative of living in a country where you can do, you know, you can buy a home. I mean, I'm so glad I don't live in a place where we're, you know, we're in a cardboard box or we're, you know, we're living out in a third world environment. I mean, I've got uptown problems. We've all got uptown problems, right? You buy a house, what a pain in the ass that has been. The fees alone are a reason to not, you'd want to sleep in your car. Yes, we have to go through the bank desk, and yes, your credit is good. And oh, yes, your credit's very good. Fantastic. You have a wonderful payment history. Oh, I see. You're very responsible financially. That's nice. Oh, you've been doing your job for a certain number of years, so you've got job stability. Hey, hang on just a second. We noticed there was a payment back in 2010 or whatever. That was more than 30. It's like 31 days late. Can you explain that? 2000 what? I have no idea. It's possible we had a rough month. Maybe there was a car in the shop or who knows? Look at the other 60 whatever payments. They're all on time. Everything's perfect. Everything's been paid off. Look at everything. We would like you to write a letter of explanation as to why this payment in 2010 was 32 days. I don't know. I can't remember what I was doing in 2010. Hey, look at the big picture, right? Look at the forest and not this single tree. You see a nearly immaculate payment history. Please write us a letter stating that you can't remember. Okay, fine.
The underwriters have noticed that a rather large transfer of funds came into your checking account in the month of January.
Yeah! You want to know why? Because I'm buying a house. That's why. I moved it from a money market account. I just moved it from here over here so that I would have all of the money I need to pay all your dumbass fees. And there's a ton of them. Tell me it's not a racket buying a house. There's an inspection fee. There's the underwriting fee. There's a processing fee and a processing fee for the processing fee. There's a certification fee. There's a preparation for the certification fee. There's a transcript fee. There's a report fee, a filing fee. There's a walk in the papers down the end of the hall fee. There's attaching this file to the email to send it to you fee. There's I called somebody because it's part of my job description fee. There's a, hey, I scratched my ass at the copy machine fee. Tell me it's not a racket and they're not charging this because they know you have nowhere else to go. You have no other option. If you're going to buy a house, you're stuck, right? Why am I paying thousands of dollars on top of all the other? Why am I paying this money to you? It's almost like I'm reminded of a time years ago, and I told this story on the radio. I'd had some kind of a reaction to something. And my heart was beating erratically, and of course your heart, you know, I'm in my 40s, I'm like, oh my God, I'm having a heart attack. All right, so we rush to the emergency room. Turns out it's nothing. I'm good. I've had my heart checked. I'm in good health. Everything's good. Okay, but I get the bills. I start getting the bills from this emergency room visit, and I'm thinking to myself, I mean, they just keep coming, and I was insured on top of the insurance. I see it's a bill for like $130, and it says self-administered medication times 4. And I'm looking back in my memory to that night. It's kind of a scary night, you know, your heart's beating funny and you want to make sure that everything's okay. And I'm not a spring chicken anymore. And who knows, blah, blah, blah. Self-administered, what was that? Did the IV? No, that wasn't self-administered. And then they did some other stuff and they stuck the heart monitor on you. And that was when then you went to the, wait a minute. Do you know what it was? You know what they charged me $130 for? Self-administered medication times 4 baby aspirin. A nurse came in, popped a baby aspirin bottle over, emptied 4 tablets in my hand, popped them in my mouth. $130. I call the billing company and I say, you gotta be shitting me. You realize how many bottles of baby aspirin I could buy for $100? And I'm not paying it on principle. I'm not paying this. I will not pay you $130 for self-administered medication. I'm not doing it. Everything else I know I'm on the hook for, I'm not doing it. We went round and round. I mean, they sent me bill after bill. I got to find. I'm not doing it. I'm not going to do it. I will drive you a bottle of baby aspirin. I'm not going to pay $130. And you know, they finally acquiesced, sort of. But all of a sudden, another charge for something else appeared on my bill. And you know how much it was for? $130. Tell me that's a coincidence. Tell me they don't have me by the balls and there's nothing I can do about it. And that's how I sometimes feel with the home purchase process. Fee after fee after fee after. Really? It costs this much? Or is it just business? Is it all just business? Anyway, it's a positive. Trust me, it's all good. You know? Our life's in boxes, my studio's in pieces. I've got a desk, I got 2 monitors, all the acoustical stuff, all the shelving, everything all around me is all boxed up. I'm literally, you should see my studio. It looks like I rented a storage unit and I put a computer and a microphone in it. So, but I'm glad I'm here. I'm glad to be with you. In just a few days, I dismantle all this stuff, right? All this stuff and go and reassemble it at station B. I'm going to put it back together and,
and hopefully, you know, get everything all configured correctly. Just FYI, I was mentioning some of the stuff we're doing in April. I think as well, I'm hoping to get the studio together in time that I'm going to get to have an audio/video chat with Lawrence Krauss. He just released a new book. It's called The Greatest Story Ever Told So Far, I think is what it's titled. And he's been working on it for a while. So I dropped him a line. I'm like, hey, Lawrence, man, you know, you got to come on the show. So we're definitely going to try to do that in April. I'm going to try to have everything back together and get cameras in place. And we can have Lawrence Krauss audio video podcast coming up in the month of April. Another thing Natalie threw out. She and the chat room's going to have a field day with this. And I see you on the switchboard. I promise I'll get to you after the opening rant here. And again, if anybody in the chat, anybody listening to the live show has something you want to talk about, I don't care what it is, the switchboard is yours. All right. Let me finish my little blathering here and then you can call. And she said, I think you should grow your hair out. Now you've seen me. Right? I look like Ferris Bueller. And she's like, no, you should grow it out. And I said, if I grow my hair longer, I will look like Eugene from The Walking Dead. No, you won't look like Eugene from if I grow my hair out, I'm afraid I'm going to look like Eugene from The Walking Dead. I put a trial balloon out on Facebook and they're like, no, 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 no. A few people said, go for it. A few others were, I see in the chat room, some people are talking about the mullet, right? Business in the front, party in the back. I'm not doing long hair or chickens. All right. I don't think I'm doing it. I mean, I'd like to do something different. The problem is I'm terrified I will look just like a midlife crisis. Like some people really look good with longer hair. I would look like, I would look like Eugene from The Walking Dead. And speaking of The Walking Dead, and if you aren't caught up, you'll want to skip forward about 5 minutes. Spoilers are coming, all right? Not big ones. Spoilers are coming. If you're not caught up or if you care, you're going to want to skip forward. Give me 5 minutes, okay? I can't figure out why I keep going back to that show. Why do I keep going back? Every Sunday night at the end of the episode, we look at each other and say, that is 60 minutes of my life I will never get back. And you know what I do the following Sunday night? I watch The Walking Dead. I watch it every week. I'm like a battered spouse. It's like, he'll change one day. I know there's good in him. I know if one day it'll all be peaches and cream. It was a fantastic show to begin with. It was like a cinematic, compelling, character-driven yarn. Now it's like watching somebody punch the clock. It's like watching somebody golf. It's what The Walking Dead is like. Season 7, again, spoilers, but I'll be quick, all right? Season 7, right? The Negan thing with the baseball bat and Lucille and Abraham. I bought that episode. Very dark, too dark for many. I totally bought it. I was all in. Negan was a fascinating, compelling, different character, chewed up the scenery. Finally, a great antagonist, right? I bought the trauma of Rick almost having to amputate his son's hand and how that screw a parent up. I never bought that Rick would just roll over to the saviors. Yeah, he just all of a sudden, he just is like, oh, we got to go out and we got to get supplies. This is how life is now. I just don't buy that. After all they've been through, that scene where the saviors pull up the first time and Rick's people give up a freaking fortified position and just hand over all their weapons and all their material. Here you go. With no resistance, no problem. Why does Rick increasingly sound not like Rick, but like a bad Rick impersonator? When he speaks, it's like watching a comedian impersonate Rick Grimes.
What's the story with Ezekiel, the king? We're supposed to buy this guy, the kingdom that he rules over. All those people buy that he's a king and actually speaks like... What? What's up with the CGI tiger? Carol! How many episodes, how many interminable episodes have we had to watch Carol on this weird sort of PTSD kick where she all of a sudden becomes peaceful and she goes on walkabout? She just leaves, doesn't tell anybody where she's going. She just goes off so she can sit by herself in a cabin and read books all day? Carol? Carol's cookies, Carol? Are you shitting me? Knowing when she goes AWOL that her friends who love her dearly are going to put themselves in harm's way to try to find out what happened to her. Which means she's actually endangering the people she says she's trying to protect. She's a living contradiction. And we know we're just marking time until one day badass Carol returns. Right? One day, Carol's Cookies Carol is coming back. It's just that we have to wait until the writers string us along week after week after week after week. We're punching the clock. We're milking it. We're filling. What's Maggie's purpose this season? Her husband was beaten to death. Right? She has a child on the way. Have we ever known a fury on planet Earth worse than the wife of a murdered character who's about to give birth to a child and raise him in a world that she wants to make a better world? Maggie is a badass anyway. What's her purpose this season? What's she do? Morgan. Morgan was an interesting character back in the day. The subplot of him trying to make peace with himself, I mean, that's interesting stuff. But does anybody buy all life is precious? All life is precious. He's been talking that stuff forever, right? Morgan, you are in an apocalyptic wasteland filled with zombies and heavily armed living people who might kill you for the backpack on your back or to stick your head in a fish tank, or they might drag your ass down to Terminus and turn you into a rump steak. All life is not precious, Morgan. It just doesn't wash. It, against the backdrop of the show, it seems totally false. What's up with the dumpster people? They speak like they're like human emojis. Who writes this stuff? The show is called The Walk. I'm almost done. The show is called The Walking Dead. Can you think of any villain or peril less threatening than a walker on The Walking Dead? How incompetent would you have to be to get overtaken or accidentally bitten by a walker, a shambling zombie that moves at the speed of litigation and announces itself coming for hundreds and hundreds of yards by making this sound? If you get bitten by a walker, if you get bitten by a walker, you were taking up air to begin with. You do not deserve to live. That's the betterment of the species is what that is. Right? If you get caught by a walker, you are diminishing the gene pool. This is natural selection. You were screwing the rest of us anyway. And the generations to come, you had to go. You're taking up air. And finally, does anyone buy... Does anyone buy that Negan would sometimes literally screw his own people? And he does all the... He just totally takes advantage of all the saviors. He's stealing their wives and he's just trampling all over. He's chucking people into ovens and he's just laughing his ass off. Complete carte blanche to do and be whatever he wants. Does anybody think that hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of people would all... Every single one of them just go along with the guy? I understand cults of personality. I understand brainwashing. I understand that that's the narrative that they're selling. All of them? You sit around and let him do whatever he wants and nobody challenges? I don't buy it.
And you know what I'm watching tomorrow night? The Walking Dead. I just can't stop. I can't stop. I need help. I need an intervention. Is that 5 minutes? Is that true? I didn't time it. I want to make sure I'm true to my word. I was close to 5 minutes. Sorry for the rant. It'll get better. You know what? Things are going to turn. Bunch of people just tell me, screw the TV show, read the graphic novel. The problem is I've never once picked up the graphic novel. I'm vested in the TV show. I got years in it. Years in it. I am pot committed, as they say in poker. And I really want it to be good. Okay, let's go to the switchboard. Area code 716. You're on the Thinking Atheist Radio podcast. Who's this?
Hey, Seth. This is Matt. How you doing?
Well, it's off topic tonight. It's very much, it's not a show for everybody, but it's therapy for me, and hopefully some of our listening audience were looking for a distraction. I've been told sometimes people are mildly amused when I go off on a tangent, so they should love tonight's show. What's going on in your world, Matt?
Yeah, well, I didn't mind your tangent. I do the same thing every Sunday, turn on The Walking Dead, and as implausible as the narrative is, I don't know. It's like some kind of addiction. You get pulled back in. So
the
only
silver linings for me, you know, Eugene is finally interesting to me. Eugene is finally starting to become a character that I care about. Everybody, you know, Carl, somebody feed Carl to the walkers. Gabriel, somebody feed Gabriel to the walkers. Sasha, feed to the walk. These people need to go. It's time for some fresh blood. They serve no dramatic purpose. I'm sorry, Matt. You got me going again. Go ahead and hit me. What else was on your mind?
Sure. Yeah. No, I know it is kind of off topic. It's not really about the about television, but maybe I've missed it before. But I'm a longtime listener of the show, and I'm just curious. Do you have any like favorite fiction authors or books that you've read? Is there a tangent you could go off on about that? I'd just be curious to hear.
Actually, it's funny. It's I've become a huge Audible subscriber, and I was before they were sponsors. They sponsored the show a few years ago, but you know, because I spend a lot of time traveling. You know, I'm in airports, or maybe I'll be doing a road trip to a tour stop and whatnot. I don't listen to a lot of music radio for pleasure. I enjoy listening to audiobooks. And right now, actually, it's funny because I had read that Orwell's 1984 was coming back into popularity in the wake of the current administration, and it made me curious. I hadn't read 1984 forever, so I downloaded 1984, and I'm going through that. Bruce Campbell's If Chins Could Kill is a biography I've been listening to. I also am a huge Breaking Bad fan, so I've got Walter White. What's his name? It just totally slipped my mind. Bryan Cranston, his autobiography just came out. I'm a horror movie buff, and so Gunnar Hansen was the chainsaw wielding Leatherface in the original 1974 classic, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Gunnar Hansen just passed away recently, but he has an audiobook he narrates himself called Chainsaw Confidential. Is that what it's called? But he tells the story of those days back in 1974 when all these college kids were working for a few bucks to make this horror classic and what it was like. And I enjoy those types of stories. And so those are the books I've been reading. Nothing hugely heavy. I'm honestly kind of burned out on a lot of the philosophy and the atheism related stuff. Before that, I was Dan's Barker, The Most Unpleasant Character in All Fiction, which is quite a good book. I reread Nailed from Fitzgerald in advance of his interview that's coming up in a few weeks with Jesus Mything in Action. And that's kind of a discussion about the historical Jesus. I'm probably a quarter of the way into another Jesus book by Richard Carrier on the historicity. I've got people sending me books all the time, so I'll get into them and then I'll get distracted because I have the attention span of a goldfish, and you know, I kind of move around them.
I don't know. That's kind of a taste of my life right now. Anything you're interested in? Anything you're doing?
Yeah, thanks for that, Seth. Yeah, actually, right now I'm kind of on a Neil Gaiman kick. Have you read anything from him?
I have not.
He's a fantasy fiction author. And I think actually on the network Stars, he's about to have, they made a TV series adaptation of his book, American Gods.
Wow. Let me write the author's name down. Anyway, give it to me again.
Sure. It's Neil Gaiman, G-A-I-M-A-N.
Cool. I'll check that out. I'm always up for something new. I might have to cheat again with the audiobook because I'm usually in motion. So audiobooks allow me to, they allow me the opportunity to immerse myself in the book while I can also have my feet in motion going somewhere, you know. I'll check that out.
Yeah, the audiobook might help, especially for that book. It's like 700 pages in paperback. So.
Wow. All right. Neil Gaiman. I'll check it out. Well, I mean, I don't have any amazingly like Douglas Adams. I just re-listened to The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, mostly because, I mean, I've got the book almost memorized, but mostly because Stephen Fry reads the book. And I just love Stephen Fry's voice. He is one of the most brilliant voice actors in the world right now. And he just animates. Who's the guy who played Arthur Dent, the actor? Oh, what is his name? Let me look it up real fast. The guy who's in Sherlock, Martin Freeman. He read The Restaurant at the End of the Universe, but it's just not nearly as good as what Stephen Fry has done with The Hitchhiker's Guide. And it's a book I could listen to over and over and over again. You know, no one wrote quite like, been lots of imitators, but nobody wrote quite like Douglas Adams. So he always makes me smile, and it's always rich with sort of these little tweaks of God and religion. He's just so good at it, or was, and his voice is surely missed. So anything else?
No, I think that's it, man. I appreciate it. And thanks for all you do. Keep up the good work.
It's an honor. Thanks for being a part of the show. Appreciate you very much. It's funny. I hadn't read Hitchhiker in, a long time. And then the film came out starring Martin Freeman a few years ago. And I enjoyed the film for the most part. And then I read the book again and then watched the film again. And I couldn't watch the film because everything felt rushed. I mean, once you've immersed yourself in that world, and where Douglas Adams takes his time to really get you through the paces and you're able to just be there, and then you see the film is trying to just cram this huge universe into 2 hours or less. And I thought I stopped it. We were watching television. I just stopped it. And I go, they're rushing. I can't take it. I can't stand it. Area code 501, you're on the Thinking Atheist Radio podcast on our sort of off-the-subject show tonight. Who's this?
This is Eric.
What's going on, Eric? What's happening in your world?
Well, speaking of Walking Dead, I'm about two episodes behind because after the, you know, they call it the Gladiator Walker, won the makeshift armor, in the little pit.
Oh, when he was at the dump and he fought the walker that had the armor with the spikes on it?
Yeah, I'm like, and by short, this is where I jump off.
I'm sorry, I'm having a hard time hearing you. What was that last line?
I said, Mr. Short, this is where I jump off.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, they're going for Shark
Factor. Mr. Shark, this is where I jump off. I mean, I get it. I understand your frustration. My thing is when they were at the dump, I call them the dumpster people. When they're at the dump, I thought to myself, this is just a chance for them to milk 4 or 5 more episodes before they do battle with the saviors, right? Now we got to go on an errand to get guns. And then they come back with guns and they say, it's not enough guns. You got to go get more guns. All right. I guess we'll turn our asses around and go out and scavenge for more guns. I mean, they're just filling. They're just milking it. And I'll be back tomorrow night, but I'm going to bitch about it. I've earned the right to gripe about The Walking Dead. Anything else, my friend?
I have a friend that's trying to get me into the Terry Pratchett books. Have you ever heard of them?
I haven't read them, no.
Well, I'm trying to branch out from Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings, so if you have any recommendations of fantasy, I'd like to know.
I'm not familiar with it, my friend, so I can't be of much help to you, but I mean, throw it out in the chat room. We'll see what they say, okay?
Okay, thanks.
Appreciate you, man. Take care. Mm-hmm. I had a message in from, I believe it's Zale, who said, communication's a fairly important subject to me. I'm not entirely certain why most people imply subtexts instead of being direct. As speech has a very specific bandwidth, and the more you try to fit it into the bigger, the chance of miscommunication. It seems to me that if you don't have literally everything in common with another person, you should be completely literal with them. Well, I mean, language is, you know, there's an art to using communication with people. I'm not an expert, but I sure do a lot of it. Like, small talk has a purpose. When you see two people who just get introduced to each other and they're saying things, but they're not saying anything. Boy, it sure is hot out today. Oh yeah, it's supposed to be warmer tomorrow. Maybe a chance of rain on Saturday, though. Been kind of a warm spring, don't you think? Those types of things. I mean, no one's really talking, but there is a function to that. Because you don't walk up to someone and say, hey, what is that scar on the left side of your face? I mean, you just don't do that. I mean, you can, but it's not normally how we approach people. You have to create a bond. You have to create a zone of comfort. You have to create goodwill. You have to create a sort of a space where people can feel comfortable discussing specific things, which is why you don't often know, who'd you vote for in the last election? You don't just jump into sensitive topics. In what church were you baptized? Quite often we start with the superfluous. We start with, hey, that's a nice whatever, you know, nice shirt. Hey, how long you had that car? Has it run pretty well? I mean, so often people use this type of stuff. It's not exactly the point you're trying to make, but my point is that sometimes a superfluous conversation can have other uses. You're creating dialogue. You are developing rapport. You know, it's like when Boghossian and those who are street epistemologists are going into discussions with religious people. The first thing you do is don't go in and immediately challenge the most sacred thing in their entire lives. The first thing you do is to create rapport and say, hey, you know, tell me about yourself. Who are you? What do you do? What do you like? What are your hobbies and interests? What are you passionate about? Tell me about you. Introduce yourself. Let me introduce myself. And quite often, once that's done, you don't go any further until the next time you have a chance to hang out. I think small talk can have its uses. Now, having said that, I do take your point that people quite often miss opportunities to say what they're really thinking, or they waste a lot of time because they just don't come out with it. I did a video a few years ago on New Year's Eve, and in the advance of the new year, the video was called Speak Your Mind. You know, this year when you're out and about and you're seeing something that matters to you, and you sit there instead of allowing yourself to just become a pressure cooker over the thing, speak your mind. I mean, if possible, say what you're really thinking. I mean, how many much time would we save in so many areas of our lives if we just came to someone and said, you know, this is what I'm thinking. This is what bothers me. This is what I want. This is what I need. This is my point. Just come out with it. I'm familiar with the story of somebody who's, from time to time, they'll come to me and talk about a coworker. A coworker does some stuff that makes them crazy. Just
You know, they leave too early, they show up late, they take long lunches without mentioning where they're going, and it puts everybody in a bind, and he feels being taken advantage of. And so I said, well, have you said something to this person? Nope. Well, I understand there's some office politics and there's a lot involved and you may or may not be their supervisor, but you know, this person might be able to go to them and say, when you leave, my workload doubles and I have to sometimes stay late to compensate. Now, you may not realize this, but this is kind of a burden and I become resentful about it. And I felt like instead of going to management, I would just come to you and say, what's up? I mean, you know, you can be direct, but still be compassionate and empathetic. And, you know, they may turn on you. They may go on the defensive. It may blow up in your face. But there's a way to do it without just being on the attack. Quite often it integrates the word I. Instead of saying, you're always gone, you say, when you were gone, I am overwhelmed with the work and I have to stay late. It's a way to deflect a little bit backward. I do take your point, Noah, that people should be more direct and more literal about what they're really thinking. Think about the relationships we're in. I mean, how many times have we not brought a problem to somebody in our love relationship because we were just, you know, we were just going to stew on it for a while. We're just going to let it fester. How many times have we been interested in someone and we never just went right out to them and said, you know, I'm attracted to you and I would love the chance to get to know you. Would you like to go out? You know, instead, you know, you just let it pass or months pass and you find out they were hoping you'd ask all along. I mean, I don't know. These are oversimplified, but the larger point is, yeah, sometimes if you get rejected, at least you didn't waste time. Now, at least you know they're not interested. At least you know you can move to other options, better options. You know that there's some other course you should pursue, right? I think there's merit to that. I don't know. What do you guys think in the comments section? Margot said, one summer day, when I was about 5 or 6, my big brother and I came across a pile of carpet underlay in the garage. It was green and embossed with little lozenge shapes. My brother, 7 years older than me, could get me to agree to anything. Like the time he completely covered my arms, legs, and face with reinforcements. Those little circles you put on your loose leaf paper. What? I mean, completely. My mother was furious. Another time he convinced me to play a game he called One of Everything, in which he said we had to taste one of every spice in the spice cabinet, which was fun till it came to the cayenne pepper. Anyway, back to the underlay. We both concurred the underlay looked like Lizard Man from Star Trek, the Gorn. And what I know now was the Gorn. Anyway, he wrapped me up in carpet underlay and he taped with hockey tape to my arms and legs to hold it in place. Then he put on a yellow shirt and he got to play Captain Kirk while I got punched and whacked and we reenacted the whole fight scene as far as we could remember it. I just remember being so thrilled he was playing with me. I didn't care. I was sweating like crazy in my homemade Lizard Man costume. That was the best day. His little sister, Margot. That's a classic scene. Pull that up on YouTube. Those of you who do not follow Classic Trek, you've not seen true action until you've pulled up the Captain Kirk Gorn fight from the original Star Trek series in the 1960s. No, it's not in slow motion. The Gorn is this supposedly sinister villain. I guess he's a villain. Such an obviously rubber. I mean, it makes the Sleestaks from the old Land and the Lost series. It makes the Sleestak look like Jurassic Park. The Gorn for eyes. It looks like they took that metal mesh on microphone covers, the windscreens for microphones. It looks like they just halved those and stuck them on each side of the mask. The mouth is frozen open because, of course, this is a rubber mask. And honestly, the Gorn almost sounds like a walker, like kind of this. And in the fight scene, Captain Kirk spends I don't know how much time putting together these materials that he finds within the rock that are explosive. And he takes, I don't know, was it a tree stump or a bamboo shoot or something he finds in the desert?
And he makes a cannon. He shoves a rock in it, and he takes a cannon and fires it and hits the Gorn and accomplishes nothing. Nothing. It doesn't kill the Gorn. It knocks it over temporarily. It does nothing. That was probably 10 minutes of the fight scene. It's so iconic that there is, I don't even know who the commercial's for, but like William Shatner in his 70s, has, I think it's for a video game where he and the Gorn are sitting on the couch in a living room and they're both playing and they're continuing the battle, but they're doing it virtually. I'm sure you can find it online. It's freaking hysterical. And they're doing the reenactment of the fights, and the swings are so slow. It literally looks like you are reenacting slow motion as part of a play. It's awesome. I mean, that's how you do classic sci-fi. It's iconic, that scene. I don't see anybody else on the switchboard. I have no idea how much longer I'm going to go. If there's something on your mind that you would like to talk about, let me know. Rebecca says, are you looking forward to the second season of Stranger Things? I am. Enjoyed the show. I found the kids a little bit annoying, and normally I love Winona Ryder, and I did not like her as the mom. And she took me out of the scene when she was playing the angsty mom. For some reason, I just didn't connect with her. But I was curious enough about it, and I was engaged enough that I'll go back for season two. I'm just now starting season two of Humans, and it sounds like I watch a shit ton of TV, and I've just told you pretty much almost everything I watch, except for Game of Thrones, Better Call Saul. And this is cyclical. One's on and the others are off. Better Call Saul starts next month. A brilliant show that should have sucked. When I heard they were making a series about Saul Goodman, I thought, for the love of all that is holy, no, don't do it, right? You're just milking it. We've all seen the hangers-on. They have brilliant success with Breaking Bad. They can't let go of a great idea, or they're just milking it for the cash, and then they go screw it up, and they ruin the whole franchise. They ruin everything. That's what I feared. Better Call Saul is freaking brilliant. It's brilliant. And then Game of Thrones, I guess there's two seasons left, and season, which season starts in July? Season seven, right? So, Game of Thrones, I enjoy. I have to read the freaking Wikipedia page just to keep up with all the subplots. I have a hard time keeping up. The show makes me feel stupid, but I love it. So that's what we do. Douglas Adams, Game of Thrones, Better Call Saul. Couple of biographies here and there. That's what I do to pass the time. Have not seen Legion. Somebody in the chat room is asking me about it. This was the month 3 years ago. I wanted to just bring this up because it just popped into my mind. Actually, it popped into my mind because I looked down the hall and I happened to see his little eyes looking at me. It was 3 years ago this month that we rescued Henry from the puppy mill. Hard to believe it's been that long. Several people, even on Facebook today, were asking me to talk about Henry and Rat Dog. I call Tootsie Rat Dog. Tootsie was Natalie's dog when we met. And I love these animals with all my heart. I used to be German Shepherds and Labrador Retrievers, and I had Great Danes for 10 years. Big, 170-pound behemoth dog. Sweet, but big dog, like a dog. And I would mock people who had the little bitty, little bitty dogs. Who's the comedian who said, if you have a dog that bounces when it barks, it's not a dog. I used to be that guy. 3.5 pounds, right? I would say, it's not a dog, it's a rat. It's a little rat. And so the nickname became Rat Dog. And that just exploded. The listeners of this show took that and ran with it. Somebody made a movie poster. I mean, they literally made a Rat Dog movie poster. It's awesome. It's got Tootsie's face and body, and it says Rat Dog in this big embossed kind of a red font, and there's flame all around it. And the subtitle says, no ankle is safe. And this is true. These dogs,
3.5 pounds, they will rain down ankle-high death upon you. Truth of it is, though, they have stolen my heart. We were looking for a companion for a rat dog, and we saw this news report about the Humane Society had done a rescue in a suburb of Tulsa, and they had 103 dogs in a single mobile home. These people were puppy mill. They were a puppy mill. They were breeding these dogs. They were trying to breed them small, which is worse for the dog. You breed them so small, they don't have enough room in their mouth for all the teeth, and they have problems internally, and people love the small, cute dog. The problem is it's not good for the dog. But, you know, these dogs were there, and they needed good homes. And so we decided to go, and we went out there, and we held all these animals, and your heart just breaks. I mean, there are some people I'd like to stick in a cage for 8 years. Henry was in a cage in that mobile home for 8 years. Oh. Makes the blood boil when you think about it. You should have seen him. I mean, his claws are all overgrown. His hair was matted, and he couldn't even see because it was covering his face. And he was emaciated. He was completely underfed. He was exhausted. They brought him out. He was just a blank. We didn't know what to do with him. And, it was kind of a big thing. We're bringing another animal into the house. Do we really want to do this? And what's it going to be like? And how damaged is he? I mean, what are we in for? What's the future hold? And so we took him home. We got the hair out of his eyes, and he just melted. There's no other way to say it. This little dog just melted from exhaustion, I think, to be touched and to be held. And he must not have been used to being held. And I think I've heard this is common with rescue dogs that aren't held much, because when you would pick him up, he would move his paws like he was swimming. Like he thought he was in water or something. And we got him a checkup, and we, went through all the stuff, and this little dog has become one of the great joys of my life. Both of them together. I have said this before, I'm like that little old lady with the 7 chihuahuas, right? That little old granny. She's been living by herself for 25 years, and she's got about 15 dogs around the house. I've become that. Because whenever I see them, I'm like, oh, Boopsie, I love you so much. I love you. Come here. Give me your kisses. I've become that person. This is a true story. It's tax season, right? This wasn't this year. This was last year. I had called and left was leaving a voicemail for my CPA because I'm too thick to do my own taxes. I don't know how to do all that stuff, right? And so I've got a guy, and he does my taxes. And I left a message, something about, hey, I'm just calling to check in to see if you need any more paperwork or whatnot. And then I was walking in the house as I was leaving the message. And I walk in, I'm like, what's up, Bobby, doing? Hey, Bobby, I love you. I became that sort of babbling idiot with my dogs, not realizing that I had not hung up the phone. And it is very likely, that on the voicemail, they heard me like, hi, this is Seth. I was calling to check on the paperwork and make sure that you needed everything before we do the taxes and file in April. Okay, let me know. Okay. I'm sure that's what happened to their voicemail. They probably saved it and play it at parties. Anyway, people have asked about him. I took him on... I took him on tour. I took the dogs on tour. We went down to Florida. We did like a few days together in Florida. And then I tacked on some tour stops because I wanted to go down and engage with the free thought groups down there. And we had Henry and Rat Dog with us. And the people, I mean, they just ate it up. And they went in. Some people posed for photographs. And Henry was with me I took him to San Diego once. I've been asked to take him on this tour I'm doing in May. I'm doing several cities in May. I'm probably not going to be able to take the dogs with me, but it's New Orleans, followed by Jackson, Mississippi. I think we're doing Memphis, Tennessee, Springfield, Missouri, and I believe Little Rock, Arkansas in the third week of May. TheThinkingAtheist.com/events if you want to be a part of those. Toronto's coming up in June. Looks like I might be going to Denver in July, possibly. Kentucky Freethought's coming up. Orlando doing the American Atheist Convention. That's happening in South Carolina in August. They've timed that one for the big solar eclipse. I guess it's at a time and a primo location for the big solar eclipse. And you can hear the Christians already being like, oh, atheists get together and the sun disappears. Tell me that's a coincidence. But I've been asked to speak at that, and so I'll be out there hanging out with everybody. TheThinkingAtheist.com/events is the website. Anybody else have anything? Anybody? Otherwise, I'm probably just going to go ahead and call it a night. I'm not going to drag the show on with just nothing else to do. But if you guys have something you want to say, just dial the switchboard number. You'll see it up there, and I'll give you a couple minutes to get in. What else is going on in the world? Let's see. I don't want to talk politics. I don't want to talk politics. I did three consecutive releases that were political. And I got crucified for doing three consecutive releases about politics. I got crucified for criticizing Trump. You know, oh, I used to love this channel before it became political when you used to just talk about atheism, but now you're talking about political stuff. I'm out. I'm unsubscribing. Several people sent me messages and said they're out. Fine. It may not be your cup of tea. It occasionally makes me crazy. All right, I'm talking atheism. For just a second, I'll talk atheism. It makes me a little bit crazy whenever we talk about our non-belief in the supernatural, but we talk about how our non-belief in the supernatural relates to the rest of our lives, and people go apeshit. Apeshit. Oh, I thought you were just going to talk about atheism. I could do 300 and some shows where every show we just say, there's no proof of any God or supernatural activity anywhere, and I could just loop it. But I would prefer to talk about real life. And sometimes the perspectives of the host are going to color the content of the show. That's kind of how talk radio works. And if you disagree, great. You can call the show. You can send an email. You can comment in the comment sections. You can comment on Facebook. You can do whatever. But the idea that, you know, well, atheism exists in a bubble and doesn't really relate to anything else that we do is just a bunch of crap. I mean, it's possible to be a non-believer and not have it ripple out into our actions and attitudes in this world. But it's not very helpful, and it's certainly not interesting. I want to talk about how we deal with the world, a woo-free world, and that bleeds into all kinds of stuff. Relationships. We're doing a show about 12-step programs. Well, how's that relate to atheism? Well, if you're doing a show about overcoming recovery without the idea of a higher power, that relates to what we're all about. Rationalists trying to find real-world solutions to our problems and to advance the species. Why wouldn't we talk about politics when so many of the politicians are theocrats or at the very least anti-science? And we're pro-science people. My science informed by the fact that I rejected the idea of gods or the idea of truth with a capital T. I rejected superstition. I now support the science. That relates to that. All right, I'm done. Let's talk about really good, bad horror flicks. Video games. Somebody wanted me to post another video of me playing a video game. I don't know if you've seen it's an Alien video game that came out. I guess it's been a couple of years. The new Alien flick directed by Ridley Scott is releasing in 2017, and I'm totally going to be there because I need Alien to be scary again. Alien hasn't been scary since James Cameron's sequel in 1986, was it? All right, Alien has not been scary since that time. Alien's become like a gag. I need the Alien to be scary again, and I think Ridley Scott can pull it off. Well, the Alien is actually scary in this video game.
It's like a PS4 game. So my stepson and I are playing it. And he is, you know, he's a video game wizard. He's got video game reflexes, if you'll pardon the cliche. He's able to manage all the buttons. I mean, I was weaned on the Atari 2600. It's a joystick with a red button on it. It's all like, I had a ColecoVision. This dates me, okay? So anyway, I'm playing it. Well, one day, just on a wild hair, I just throw a camera on myself as I'm narrating, and I do like a 3 to 5 minutes section of me playing the game. And the alien's in the room, and I'm sneaking around, and it ends in just a horrifically nasty, bloody mess. And it's on YouTube. I mean, you can find it. I think it's on my Facebook page as well. And it was a ball. I read that the game was not very successful financially, and so they're not planning to make a sequel, which is tragic because it is a fantastic game. It is fantastic. It is so engaging, so much fun. Yeah, it's a bit of an errand list, but it's compelling and spooky and scary. You know, as you're running the errands, you feel your heart pounding in your chest, and the lights go out, and you hear the noises, and you know he's right above you. It's a visceral experience. So anyway, that video is online. I don't play a lot of video games, so I'm not going to be. What's the channel where people do nothing but just narrate themselves? Is it Twitch or some other channel where these? I guess people can make a living doing this. They just play video games nonstop, and they just roll video or audio and narrate as they play, and people pay. They pay to watch this. And people enjoy it enough to continue paying. They wouldn't enjoy it with me. Trust me, it'd get old. Area code 308, you're on the Thinking Atheist radio podcast. Who's this?
Amanda.
Hi, Amanda. Tell me you have something interesting to say, because I really don't. It's been almost an hour, and I'm just,
When you were talking about terrible horror movies, did you ever get into the Leprechaun movies at all?
I think I saw the first, but I haven't seen any of the other ones. Good stuff, or like so bad they're good. Oh, Leprechaun.
They're so bad they're good if you watch them when they first came out years ago. But they came out with a newer one not too long ago. It's supposed to be the origin story of like where the Leprechaun came from. So Warwick Davis is no longer playing the Leprechaun, but like the WWE or like the wrestling people took over, and it's just terrible. It is the worst thing out there. I wouldn't waste money on buying it for sure, but a friend and I a few years ago decided to get it since we've seen all of them, and we watched it a couple St. Patrick's days ago, and it was so bad we talked through most of it, and the only thing that was really good about it is when the characters started dying off because we couldn't handle how corny they were anymore.
Have you ever seen the documentary called The Best Worst Movie?
No, I have not.
Okay. Well, there's a film that came out. I want to say it came out in late 80s, early 90s. It's called Troll 2. And it has been dubbed by many or deemed by many the worst film of all time. And it's one of those movies that was so bad that it became a living thing. Okay. People started, college campuses started showing it. People started, this whole group of fans grew up around it. It was so awful that it was actually wildly entertaining. And this subculture of Troll 2 fans exists even today. And so this documentary filmmaker went back and found the characters and the director of Troll 2 back from 1990-ish. And found out what they were doing in their lives, and they got them all back together to reenact scenes, and they had a big screening and whatnot. It's fascinating. It's a documentary called Best Worst Movie. Watch that and then rent Troll 2. It is so bad. It's brilliant. Okay.
I'm trying to think, is that the one where there's like a little kid who finds out these people are turning into trolls and like a grandpa turns into one?
They try to feed him these green sandwiches to turn him into trolls.
Yes, I was going to say something about green stuff, food. Yes, I did watch that probably when I was about 10 years old. So, 20 years ago.
I would imagine if you're high, it is the greatest film ever made. or if you are just at a party of fellow horror movie buffs, if you have a Mystery Science Theater 3000 kind of sense of humor, Troll 2
yes,
is a must-see. Okay? It's a must-see.
A friend and I will get on Netflix and watch one-starred movies just to see how bad they are. There was one about a crocodile on there, too, and it was awesome. A crocodile man. He was like half man, half crocodile. Then he like kidnapped a lady and had babies with her. Terrible, but we still watched it.
Yeah, I'm trying to see the logistics of the crocodile and human coupling. I'm a little
No, it was bad. When it got to that part, we were like, "What did we just watch?"
Hang on, just a second. It's called Crocodile Man.
Crocodile or the creature? Maybe the creature.
The creature. I gotta look this up. Hang on, just a second. No, Crocodile Dundee, Crocodile Hunter, Crocodile Men. I've got to go look this up. I'll have to go find it and check it out.
And it might be called Creature, the Creature.
I'm in. It's like, was it Sci-Fi? The television network actually put a poll out. Was it on its website where they said, just tell us what kind of creature you would like to see? Now this is the legend. I don't know if it's true, but the report was that they just asked the people, what kind of batshit combination of beasts would you like to see be a monster in one of our films? And people would just put stuff together, you know? Now, a hamster boy.
Yes.
You know?
Sci-fi man. Original movies can be terrible.
Part man, part ant. I mean, they are so awful that some of them have become classics. Mansquito, those types of films, you know what I'm saying?
I have a friend who lives watching all the Sharknados.
The first one was entertaining, but I heard that the other Sharknados were just, they weren't even bad good. They were just lame.
I don't think they were trying anymore. I think they even referenced the fact that a shark in a tornado was ridiculous, and then another one came by, like they lost everything.
There's a live tour with the Mystery Science Theater people. They're doing or Riff Tracks, whatever they call themselves now. They go out and do live tours in front of a live audience. They'll screen the film and they'll do the voices in front of a live audience. I think that would be big, big fun. But I like you. And honestly, there's some campy horror that's actually, it winks at the audience and it's brilliant. Some of the classics back from the 80s are like Reanimator. They're brilliant films made for about $1.50, and they know it. They know what they are. They know what they aren't, but they have legs. They remain classics even today, and they're genuinely good films. So good for what they are.
Yeah.
Anything else?
No, I think that's about it.
I think we did plenty of damage there. I got to go check out the creature. I appreciate you very much. Yeah,
that might be what it is, but yep. Thank you. Have a good day.
All right. I don't see it under creature. I'm literally pulling it up as she's talking. Somebody help me find the crocodile movie. Put it in the chat room, or if this is after the fact, stick it in the comment section. Crocodile man movie or horror movie. Let's see. Primeval, there's Alligator, but I know that's not what she was talking about because that came out when I was in freaking junior high. Blackwater, Blood Surf, Rogue. Lake Placid was actually a lot of fun. And that's a crocodile movie. That's not the one she's talking about. Top 10 best crocodile movies. There's a list. Top 10 list of crocodile movies you must watch before you die. Rogue. A 2007 independent horror film, Australian film, Crocodile Dundee, Lake Placid, Dark Age, Primeval, Alligator, Eaten Alive, Blood Stuff, Ride the Next Wave in Terror. The article says, talk about a gigantic man-eating crocodile movie and you'll find quite a few better flicks than Blood Surf. But what if I say it's not that bad compared to movies like Super Croc? There's Killer Crocodile and Black Water, What You Can't See.
can hurt you. And there's a trailer. I'm not going to take the time to watch it here because I realize you can't see what I'm seeing. There's an art to the campy horror flick. And sometimes there are people who are playing it dead straight and they get it so wrong, it becomes a classic. Troll 2. Rent best, worst movie, and then go watch Troll 2 and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. I'm going to call it a night. Go grab, I don't know, I'm craving. You ever get to the point where you're craving something, but you're not exactly quite sure? And probably a chocolate shake. I'm going to go do that, and we'll call it an evening and post this, and I'll see how much shit I take in the comment sections for doing a whole show about something that has no importance or significance whatsoever, but just happens to be something to listen to. I enjoyed it. It was nice to vent. It was nice to hear from everybody. It's nice to kill some time together. Have a wonderful night. Have a wonderful weekend, and I'll see you back here Tuesday. We're doing a show called Jesus on a Fish Stick. And if you like rants, you're going to like Tuesday. I'll see you then. Take care.
Follow The Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter. Watch dozens of original videos on The Thinking Atheist YouTube channel. And visit our website for resources, links, contact information, the editor's blog, and more. TheThinkingAtheist.com.